You remember when we talked about angels a little bit? Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about a little bit about that again today. But remember when I told you that sometimes things happen in your lives that are so fantastic that you can't believe it happened, that you lived through it or whatever? Mm-hmm. All right. Now, I told you about a gun blowing up in my hand almost 50 years ago. Now, I shoot left-handed. When I shot this gun, the only thing left in my hand was that. Like that. My end of my index finger was absolute hamburger from there out. They put it back together. They wanted to cut it off. That's one half of the barrel. All right? That's one half of the barrel. This should have gone right through me. That's the plug in the end of the barrel toward me. There's the stock. Now, this is the way I picked it up. Okay? There's the hammer of the lock. Do you see how it's twisted? That should have gone through me. This part of the barrel right here, there was a 2x12 in a porch that went out. It cut that 2x12 half in two and then went another half mile. Behind me was a door which it blew off the hinges. Okay? Now, there's what the rest of the stuff looks like. That's pieces of it. There's all types of shrapnel. There's the trigger that went away. Here's another. There's the thing that went underneath the barrel that blew it completely apart. As you can see, it was silver soldered to the barrel. It's all gone. That was quite an explosion. There was a ramrod that was underneath the barrel. All of this stuff should have gone through me, as you can see. Brother Roger, have you ever known anybody to pull a hand grenade and just hold it in their hand? Huh? Is this about the same thing? Real close. God does miraculous things sometimes. Because I wouldn't be here doing this today. I should have been extremely maimed, totally destroyed, dead, or something. And I went to the hospital, and they sewed my finger back up. Actually, they went there that night. They wouldn't do it. And they just soaked it in alcohol and everything. They said, it's too bad. We're going to cut it off. And I said, no, you're not going to cut it off. It's good, see? I said, give me some sutures, and you give me some painkiller in there, and I'll sew it back together, and I'll show you how to do it. Because I had sewn myself up before. Anyway, and also, this hand was run over by a truck, and it was smashed out flat just like that, too, see? And had 5 cords of oak firewood on top of my hand, with a piece of wood on top of my hand and a rock underneath it. So, you know, things happen, but whatever. So I saw what they did to this one when they took all that excess meat and cut it out of there and all of that. And then I said, well, I know how to fix this. And went to my doctor the next day, and he said, Jimmy, what'd you do? Well, I said, I tried to blow my finger off. Well, he said, we can fix it. We'll see how good useful it is after that. Anyway, that's angels, guardian angels. Now, there's no other explanation, but I could go into one thing after another in my life, telling you how God has brought me through things which should not have happened. But they happen. Now let's go into 53, and it's God's eternal purpose revealed in man and his creation. Now we're talked about here in 2 Peter 2 and 9, but ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Now, mankind, you know, Adam was clothed with what? Originally.
With God's Shekinah glory.
He was clothed with God's glory. His clothes were glory. And remember, angels are clothed, aren't they? Clothed. Spirits are unclothed beings. Angels are clothed. Spirits are unclothed beings. Clothed with a raiment of light, stripped away, the blinding realization that they were naked caused them, the sinning pair, to seek fig leaves for a covering. Just as surely does this posterity resort to the works of their hands when sin is realized. All men actually realize they're sinners, so they have to do something. They make excuses for how they're going to get to heaven. I'm not as bad as everybody else. You know, we're wicked people. Mm-hmm. We're sinners. Compared to Jesus Christ, boy, we're bad. And there's only one way we can get to heaven. It's by grace and by God's grace. All kinds of false religions try to make a way to get to heaven. It's all through your works. You know, my mom says, well, if you've done bad things, just do a lot of good ones and they'll overpower them. It'll erase the bad ones. Is that what the Bible says? No. It says, by the works of man's righteousness is like filthy rags compared to God's righteousness. Christ is the light of the world, and his redeemed people will one day wear the eternal badge of redemption in pure white raiment. In 2 Corinthians 5, 1 through 4, and Revelation 4 and 4, and Revelation 19 and verse 8. We won't go to all of these different places. God did not make a push-button man or a mechanical man, and that you can put down robot there. You know, they have robot competitions now, don't they? How many of you heard of that? Mm-hmm. Robot competitions where they make robots do this? How many of you heard of these robot vacuum cleaners? Mm-hmm. You have a vacuum cleaner in your house and it just goes. You don't do anything to it. It just goes to work when it's supposed to go to work and have at it. And it does this little thing. You don't have to worry about it. It's a robot. Now, God could not have made robots to glorify Him. Man was made for the glory of God. God did not make a robot man, but an individual personality with sovereignty over his being. Genesis 1:26. God made man in his sovereign image to have sovereignty over all the creation. To will and the physical power to perform. Two choices were set before him in Eden. How many Edens were there?
Two.
Who was in the first Eden?
Lucifer.
All right. And Eden is a what? A palace and a throne room. And then God made the second Eden on the earth and placed man in it. He was free to make a choice, but under obligation to choose God. Was it right to obey God or was it right to obey Satan? This was the choice that mankind must make. His posterity is faced with the same question. Shall we obey God or Satan? Remember, one of the great prophets of old says, choose this day whether you will serve God or Jehovah or Balaam, or Baal, all the Baals, all the lords of this land. Man's wrong choice was patterned after Satan's own rebellious choice. In Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, page 54, man chose independence and self-rule, Genesis 3 and 5. That's what he did, independence and self-rule. Three ways in which men are kept from God were used of Satan in Eden and our foreparents and in our own lives. For all that is in this world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of this world, 1 John 2:16. The consequence of man's sin was death, Romans 5 and 12. And God drove mankind from the garden to live upon the earth. And the earth is cursed because of man, isn't it? Why do you have thorns, thistles? How many of you ever have to go chop weeds? All the hands went up. Out here, it's really a problem, isn't it? We got all kinds of weeds. And when you're chopping weeds, you get stuck, don't you? And when we have these other little demonic creatures flying around, hornets and wasps, to pester us even more. Yeah. The question enters, why did God not allow him to live in reach of the tree of life in Genesis 3, 22 and 23? Why didn't God allow man to have the access to the tree of life?
You mean after he sinned?
After he sinned.
Because it would keep him in a sinful state forever.
Yeah.
That's right. Now, how many of you that are saved would like to live in this sinful body for eternity? But every lost man wants to live as long as they can, don't they? A child of God does not want to live in this body forever because it's cursed. It is cursed. We are living in a God-made no redemption for the body whatsoever. No. It's going to have to be changed. It's going to be have to be brought into a brand new creation like the new heavens and the new earth. It'll have the same DNA, but it won't have the Adamic nature in it, which is going to be really good. Your soul and your spirit this day wrestle, don't they, with that body all the time. Now let's go back to your little thing that I handed out to you for just a moment.
Well, it's like scientists can't really figure out why our bodies die.
Yeah.
They don't really know or why we die. I mean, they know things break down, but they don't know why it does it. Because we are a very good machine.
We are a very good machine, what we call a self-parroting machine. We repair. Our bodies repair itself if you give it the right food and everything. It will repair itself. Herbs and things that God put into this world are things that's medicine. What culture of mankind sought the medical cures more than any other race?
Indians.
Huh? The Hamites.
Oh.
The Hamites. Hamites were the greatest builders of civilizations, the inventors, and the discoverers of medicine and herbs. Now, let's go to your little chart here. Now, I don't want to go really deep into this, but this has something to do why God didn't make man a robot. Now, we have people out there today that believe this. And you will run into them. Montana ran into them, didn't he? Mm-hmm. In the seminary, they very confused him. I had spent hours talking with him because people are confused on the person of God. If they had this class, they wouldn't be confused. That's all I can say. If they had this class in seminary, they wouldn't near be so confused. But it's because the person of God is very important to how he created, okay? God did not create men to be damned. Muhammad said he created hell to fill it with mankind. What's the Bible say? That God created hell for the devil and his angels that sinned. And that's an eternity past, right over here. In space and time, God made man. God did not want to put man in hell. You put man in hell. Each individual puts you in hell. Now let's look and see the different views here. Now, on this original chart, there's colors here, but my printer did not print the colors for some reason. But over here on the left side, we have superlapsarian, antilapsarian, infralapsarian. Men are not created reprobate. That's the infralapsarians. Now, it's the superlapsarians and antilapsarians, they believe that God creates some men to go to hell. And those people don't have a choice. Okay, let's read this. Save some, condemn the others. All men are spiritually dead, but only the elect have the ability to respond. What does that just say there?
That some are chosen.
Some are chosen for hell. Did God create Satan or Lucifer? Did he create Satan, by the way?
Yes.
No, he didn't create Satan.
Oh, yeah, he created Lucifer.
No, he created
he didn't create Satan. Who did he create?
Lucifer.
He created Lucifer, which light means light carrier, and then Lucifer, because of volition, because of sovereignty over his destiny, and because he had to have sovereignty to serve God, he could not serve God willingly, unless he had that volition. He was not a robot. The angels are not robots. Spirits are not robots. Man is not a robot. If God had created Satan, would he have created evil?
Yes.
If he created, since he created Lucifer, with the volition, sovereignty over his eternal soul, did he create evil? No. If he created spirits, all these angels and spirits, if he created them to become evil, would he have created evil?
No.
Yes. If he created them to become evil, he would have created evil. Now, is God capable of creating evil?
No.
That's against the nature of God, isn't it? Read it again. Tulip. Tulip. Total hereditary depravity is what tulip means. The first T, total hereditary depravity. That's what we're studying under that little heading right there. Now these are the superlapsarians and antilaps are the antilapsarians, and this means before the fall. Lapse means fall. That God decided all this before the fall. Now superlapsarians infralapsarians and sublapsarians isn't exactly according to reality of how God. How did God decide all things? When did God decide all things?
In eternity past.
In eternity past, and that was before the fall, wasn't it? Was it or was it not? Did he know that the fall was going to happen? Yes. So he prepared for the fall. Now let's go over here to the right. This is a sublapsarians or post-lapsarianism. And I am a modified sublapsarian. All men are depraved, but all men are given the ability to respond to grace. All men are depraved, but they're not totally so depraved that they don't have receptors in them. You understand? They're not totally so depraved that they don't have a receiver, an antenna there. Now, if you talk to the superlapsarian, they say God created some men without receivers. What would that be doing? Creating men to be damned. Would that be a bad act? They said this is God's sovereign will. Is God sovereign? Did he make man sovereign? And they will say, if they really get down to the nitty-gritty, they'll say, well, Adam was sovereign because, boy, how can you do anything else but see that? It's pretty plain, isn't it? But all mankind after his children, some were elect and some were damned. Brother Ray, is this helping you understand this just a little bit? All right. You and the tulip, like the flower, tulip. You, unconditional election. Create the elect and the reprobate, reprobate the rest, not on any meritorious quality of the elect, but on grace only. That's superlapsarians. Let's see what it says again. Create the elect and the reprobate, the rest not only on any meritorious quality of the elect, but by grace alone. Now, God doesn't see anything in the elect, that means the saved, that are good. We're not good. We're really not good. We're only saved by what?
Grace.
And the reprobate are what? They don't have any, God didn't choose them to be reprobate, but here God chose them to be reprobate. Now let's we'll go over to the other side with the sublapsarian, post-lapsarian. Create human beings and call the elect and those who are reprobate on equal callings. Do you see that? God calls all men to salvation, doesn't he? 1 John 2:2, for he is our propitiation, talking about Jesus, and not for ours only, but for the whole world he died. All mankind. Look at L. Limited atonement is what it says. Authorize the fall, but redeem only the elect. The reprobate are not called and do not have the ability to respond to God's grace. The atonement is limited only to the elect only. The atonement is limited only to the elect. I believe that. The atonement is limited only to the elect in only one place. That is only applied to the elect. The atonement is universal. The atonement is sufficient to save all mankind. Jesus didn't die just for the elect. He died for all man. Is that what the Bible teaches? All right. Jesus died not only for all mankind, but he died to redeem the whole cosmos, material worlds back to himself. Now, go over here to the sublapsarian view of limited atonement. Create human beings and give the ability to respond to God's call to all man. The atonement is sufficient to save all mankind, but efficacious only to the elect. Now, you ever heard of Unitarian Universalists? You heard of those? They believe that when Jesus Christ died on the cross, that all men are going to be saved, that God is not going to send anybody to hell. Period. We don't believe that. We don't believe that. Okay, I. I stands for irresistible grace. You might write these little notes down there. Irresistible grace. Now, the superlapsarian and antilapsarians, they call only the elect by an irresistible force of grace going beyond any personal ability to respond to the grace of God. That's what they believe. Now, I will say this one thing, and this is one of the things that these superlapsarians and antilapsarians always say. Show me one person that of the elect that resisted the grace of God. None of them have they? But what else? A lot of the wolves that are going to be reprobate have resisted the grace of God, haven't they? Many times they have resisted the grace of God. Have you ever heard somebody, see somebody, have seen them under conviction, and they said, some other time? Some other time? Now let's go over there to the sublapsarian, postlapsarianism. Save some and condemn others. This view holds to an unlimited atonement, but it believes in irresistible grace. Now, that is your, what we call the infralapsarians. Now, even the sublapsarians believe in this. You have to modify that sublapsarianism to get to where save some and condemn others. This view holds to unlimited atonement, but believes in irresistible grace. That's your infralapsarian and some of your sublapsarians. Number five, P. P stands for what? Preservation of the saints. Put that down here. Preservation of the saints. Provide salvation only for the elect, with a guarantee of eternal salvation, not based upon works, but upon grace only. Now, provide salvation only for the elect, with a guarantee of eternal salvation, not based upon works, but upon grace only. Now, over here to the post-lapsarianism, provide eternal salvation for all, but the atonement is only efficacious to the elect. That is the correct view. And then at the bottom, the author is me. The author is modified sublapsarian, believing in total hereditary depravity, but providing the ability to respond to grace by all men. Unconditional election, period. Unlimited atonement. The author totally rejects the doctrine of irresistible grace. The author truly believes in preservation of the saints and total security of eternal salvation for true believers in Christ. Keep this. You will need it. You will have people at Valley Baptist Church that believe this. And you will need to give what you believe. You will need to give your reason for what you believe. And there you will have the answer for them, okay? And what is the answer? The answer is the person of God. God would not be the God that we know if He did those things, would He? Now let's go on back down to page 54. God did not create robots, did He? Why didn't God make it impossible for man to sin in the first place? Because God could not receive any glory if man was a robot. We just studied that whole tulip thing, didn't we? His promise of eternal salvation for him in Genesis 3:15, God expressed a confession, or Adam confessed, expressed a confession of faith in Christ when he named the woman Eve, the mother of all living. She should have been called what, Brother Ray? The mother of all dying. But he looked and he believed in Genesis 3:15, the promise of the Messiah, didn't he? He believed that. Redemption was not expedient for God and no afterthought. God does not plan on crisis planning. We have insurance policies, don't we? God doesn't need an insurance policy. He knows exactly what's going to happen and He's planned for it. There's no crisis planning on our part. Crisis planning is if the winds come and tear the house up, or the rains come and flood the place away, or lightning strikes and burns your house down, or whatever else, we have insurance for it, don't we? Now, God didn't have to have an insurance policy for salvation. We have an insurance policy when we are saved, because God assures us, that's an assurance policy, that He's going to redeem us forever. He determined to send His Son into the world to purchase man's redemption. This plan was operation when He made Adam. It says when He made Adam. I'd like for you to change that, before He made Adam. Back here in eternity, before He ever made Adam, God had that plan in force. For as much as you know that you were not redeemed with corruptible things as silver and gold from your ungodly daily habits that are received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ as a lamb without blemish and without spot, who verily was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you, 1 Peter 1, 18-20. God drew up all the blueprints in eternity past. That wasn't an afterthought. Now let's go to page 56. We know that the faith line, now I'm going to skip over some of this because he didn't know enough Hebrew or something when he did this. That's all I can say. This is a different opinion. I won't even give that so I won't confuse you with it, okay? Because a lot of you are young students and we don't need to make you more confused than you are already. This line of faith is always in the minority. And God will ultimately bring full realization in his eternal purpose with man. There are two genealogies in the Bible he talks about, the faith line and the line, and he goes down into Genesis, the sixth chapter, and several verses. And there is this theory that those were sons of God, were those that were saved, and the others were lost. That's not what it is. We have a faith line that kept itself pure. And what is one of the most horrible things that Satan and fallen angels could do to God in relation to mankind? God created man in what? In his own image. Now, we know that all angels are what gender?
Male.
Male. Okay? And according to Genesis 6th chapter, and every rabbinical, the Talmud, the Mishnah, the book of Enoch, everything we have back from that period of time says that these sons of God were angels that cohabited with women. And then they would pervert and twist and horribly mutate God's mankind that was created in his image. And they became a race of monsters. Monsters. Malignant race of monsters. And according to the book of Enoch, we could go there and look at that. I'll just refer to it. I won't go there. I think it's in the 6th and 7th chapter in the book of Enoch. You can go to the website, discovertheword.com, and look over there to the right-hand side. It says the book of Enoch, and you can read this stuff. How many of you watched horror movies ever? Emma, you watched horror movies a little bit? Vampire stuff? You know, have you ever seen Dracula and all that? This is where it all started. These beasts, these Nephilim, say Nephilim. These Nephilim began to eat and drink. They drank the blood of other men. They had a voracious appetite for sin and violence. We find in the book of Enoch that there were 200 angels that banded together and made a blood pact that they would go on with their purpose. And they knew that they would reprobate themselves, and when they did, and they would go down and cohabit with women, and they brought in all types of evil practices into the human race. And they disclosed to them what we call forbidden knowledge. Forbidden knowledge. And this is the sciences of forbidden knowledge. We could go up greatly in that. Do you understand this? You understanding something? You getting some of this, brother? Okay. But the whole story here, for the next two pages, is that these angels, these fallen angels, went in with women and brought forth a race of terrible beings, these Nephilim. They were monsters. They drank, and they drank animal blood, and they ate animals, which was forbidden for them to eat. If you killed an animal during this period of time right here, you're guilty of murder. We studied from the Hebrew Scriptures, and we know that animals have souls. Now, we don't understand about their eternal beings or anything, but do they have souls? Do they have nefesh? Yes, they do. Do they have basar? That's flesh. Do they have ruach, spirit? Yes. God made them triune too. But he made man in his triune exact image. And so these angels corrupted and what contaminated the DNA. And so now we're going to go over here to the flood. Over here. What was man supposed to do here when he sinned is do good and offer a blood sacrifice. And what did they do? Genesis 6, they just reveled in absolute wickedness. And the angelic forces began to... How could... by the way, just think about this. How many angels and spirits rebelled against God? Do you remember how many? One-third of them. Now, can one-third usually beat two-thirds in a war, Brother Roger? This is the captain right here. You're outnumbered, aren't you? You got to have some real good tactics for one-third to beat two-thirds, huh? Real good tactics. And that usually doesn't happen. But how could Satan build up his forces? By what?
Get humans on his side.
Procreating. Making more of these Nephilim. Now, we have famous Nephilims in the Bible, don't we? We have Og. We have, I can name you a whole bunch of them, but we have Goliath. Everybody knows about Goliath. These are Nephilim. You know that I... Have you ever heard me tell a story when I saw Bigfoot? How many of you heard me tell that story? Any of you heard me tell that story?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you have. Have you? Mm-hmm. Roger, you heard. Ray, you heard it a little bit. Marilyn. I was a hunter and a guide for many, many years. I was in the woods chasing bears, lions, raccoons, bobcats. See these deer? That one came up there from Tejon Ranch. That big bobcat over there, he came from up on Greenhorn Mountain right over there. I chased him for like 2 months before we finally got him. He was killed. He was big. He was this tall. Long. He was like this long. He was 5 foot long. Big, big bobcat. I put him on Canadian lynx cat form there, but it wasn't near as big as he was. He was big. He was almost as big as a lion. Well, I chased all these animals. I used to catch them alive sometimes and tie them up and throw them in a dog box and bring them home and sell them for people to use them to train their dogs. They'd take them out and turn them loose, and they'd tree them on a tree, and then they'd catch them again, and they'd do this over and over and over again and feed them in the meanwhile and all that. So I brought a lot of those down, and that takes a pretty stupid person to catch these wild animals. I have claw marks and teeth marks all over me. I would get out there, I had steel-toed boots, and I stuck that steel-toed boot in her mouth and reached down and started pulling her legs and tying them up with clothesline rope, tied them up like a suitcase and throw them in the dog box and then get them out of there without getting killed. But, you know, I did that. I caught a deer one time alive and tied a live buck up. Wasn't a very big one, but I tied him up and put him in the floorboard of the truck and brought him down to town because everybody brings dead deer home. We were going to bring a live one home. That's different, see. Did crazy things. I used to go wild hog hunting. Dieter Bergstrasser went with me wild hog hunting one time. I always used a .22 pistol. That's what I kill bear with, lions, everything, a .22 pistol, okay? I tell people I went wild hog hunting with a .22 pistol, they think I'm crazy. But I did. Got over there, and I killed three wild hogs. I shot this big Russian wild boar, about 350 pounds, with tusks going out of the side of his mouth like that, and snapping at me and everything else, and I ended up loading that gun. I think I shot him about 15 times or so. Before I finally got him down, jumped up on top of him, stabbed him, and he jumped up in the air, and I went sailing through the air. I was standing on his head like that, his body, and I stabbed him down through his chest like that into his heart. And up he came right after me, and old Dieter's boy, he's going to kill you, you crazy Indian. Let me go get a 30-odd six or something. You know, I said, everything's fine. Well, anyway, I was up in Nevada. I never saw a Bigfoot in my life. And, these stories get you interested, don't it? Okay? You're alive now? You're alive? You wait? Okay. I was up in Nevada, out in the middle of the desert, White Mountains, that way in the west were 14,000 feet. Over here is 12,000 feet, Silver Peak Range, and I'm out here on the Silver Peak Road. If you go to Google, you can read this story. Because they read Bigfoot research, they interviewed me many, many times over this thing. So I was out there with my oldest boy, and we went out there on this gravel highway out the hot tub. Hot water's coming out of there at 105 degrees, 200 gallons per minute, and it's just wonderful, and I didn't have my well in yet. And so we'd go out there every night and take a bath, and I was working for this place, and I was outside sales. I was delivering stuff all over up there from Mammoth Lakes to Silver Peak, Tonopah, Nevada, all over Fish Lake Valley and everything. And so I would go all day long, And then it did crash almost. We'd go out there and we'd soak in this hot tub and take a bath. And we'd get up and we'd just poke along all the way home. And the night was just beautiful that night. The stars shining like you can't believe. Just light in the night. You could drive without headlights. And the moon was shining pretty bright. And when we started to come back, I was only going like 4 or 5 miles an hour because it's kind of a washboard road, bumpy. So I was going real slow. And I was looking for rattlesnakes and looking for coyotes and stuff like that. I had a .44 Magnum laid in the seat, and I could shoot just like a rifle with that .44 Magnum. Brother Ray, you've seen me shoot a pistol. Yeah, I didn't need a rifle. Anyway, so we were going along there real slow, and there's a spotlight there in the seat. I was in the company truck, but I had this stuff there. Anyway, so I see this guy walking about a half a mile off the road coming like that. And out there in the woods like this, there is nobody out there. You get broke down out there and you see light someplace, you go to those lights right now because something may happen. It may turn into a blizzard. Anytime, you may have a hurricane winds or whatever, you don't know, and you're going to be out there by yourself. So if you see somebody moving around out there, you go to the light. So I said to myself in my head, there comes a guy, he's broke down out there someplace, needs a ride. And so the road goes up over this mountain and comes back down, and I saw him heading toward the place where it goes down in the lowland, and he was going to cross over down there. And so I expect this. I expect to see this guy. Except as I'm looking over there like this, this guy is moving really fast. He's really tall. But he's just getting on, boy. He's moving on. Going down there. And I get down here to this deal. I didn't tell my son anything. He was just going on all the time talking. And I just listened to him talk. And we get down here to where this thing's going to cut us off. This guy's going to cut us off in the road. Well, when he walks out into the headlights, which is about... probably not over from here to that tree out there, which is about 50 yards. He walks across the road. When I see what it is, I instantly, my hair stands on end. Back of my neck, my hair stands on my end. On end. This is not a man. This is a creature, about 8 foot tall and thin, the color of a deer. And he's been rolling in alkali dust, and dust is trailing off of his fur. He's swinging his arms. He's walking across the road just like this, pointing away from me. He's walking out into the sagebrush on that side. And my heart is going. I mean, I am in shock when I see this thing because, first place, I don't believe in him. I always used to say, if anybody would have seen a Bigfoot, I would have. And guess what? I'm in a place where I didn't expect a Bigfoot to be at all. Period. How's this world? What's going on out here? Well, I got down where the thing crossed the road, and I stopped right there. And I looked at my son, and I saw him just going crazy over there on his side. We didn't say anything. We got down here to this road where I thought. I said, son, did you see anything cross the road? Right? He said, Dad, what'd you see? I said, what'd you see? And he said, what'd you see? And he said, what did you see? And he grabs the spotlight and he said, let's see where it went. I said, leave it alone. Leave it alone. Let's get out and look for tracks. I said, leave it alone. Leave it alone. Don't mess with it. And I took off. And he's very disappointed in me. Because he has never seen me afraid of anything in his whole life. He saw me kill those wild hogs and saw that Russian wild boar after me and Dieter screaming and hollering, let me go get a big gun. I said, don't worry about it. I just kept loading that gun. I had to jump over the fence and he would come after me. I'd get back over here. He'd come again. I'd shoot him. He'd go down. I'd shoot him. He'd go down. Shoot him. He'd go down. He said, let me go get a big gun. I said, don't worry about it. I'll get him. I mean, this thing is 350 pounds of killing machine. Coming at me from all directions. I used to go up there and treat these lions. Now, this takes nerve and guts and I don't know what else, maybe stupidity. Get a lion up on a tree up there like that, and lion, the smallest lion we've got was 85 pounds of tornado. I just shoot that thing in 22 through the lungs and just sit there and wait underneath the tree. His lungs would fill up, he'd fall out dead, or almost dead. that takes nerve to sit there and for that thing to come down, because any time that thing can come down there, and then you've got a tornado of killing machine right around you. You're going to wipe out all them dogs and everything. How many of you have house cats? How dangerous can a house cat be when he gets riled up? He can work you over, can he? You just put some about 100 pounds or 85 pounds or 200 pounds as one I killed. I wasn't afraid of them. But this thing terrified me. I was terrified of it. Terrified. In shock and terror. We went on. My son was really disappointed in me. Dad, I don't understand you. I've never seen you like this before. What is wrong with you, Dad? And we kept on going down the road for 7 more miles. I got down there to the corner, and I stopped when we got on Highway 264. And I said, what did you see, Jimmy? He said, Dad, do you think it was a deer walking on his hind legs? I said, no. Can you imagine that? Dad, do you think it was a bear? I said, no. And I told him what I saw. I said, I saw a man walking over there like that. And when he come into the lights, it was something about 8 foot tall. It had short hair. It was tall and thin, long arms. You know, around 8 foot tall. Going across the road, swinging. Its hair had trailing off of it alkali dust. Yep, that's what I saw, Dad. That's what I saw, but I don't believe it. It had to be some kind of optical illusion. We went down to Dyer post office there where I lived behind there, and a little market there in the boonies where it was an all-night bar and restaurant and stuff. And Jimmy said, let's go over there and see if anybody saw something weird down there at the hot tub. And I said, okay, let's get our clothes on. We were just very dressed for bed, basically. Nobody's around here. You know, this is out in the country. So we went over there, and the first person Jimmy talked to was Norm Williams. He said, Norm, anybody ever see anything weird down at Hot Tub? And he said, oh, yeah. He said, a man was killed and mauled by a wild animal down there. But we think somebody maybe had a pit bull or something and killed the guy and then put the pit bull on him, shoot him all up. And, all right. And then we were talking around. He talked about that for a while, and then I knew an old cowboy over there named Robbie Michaels. And Robbie said, you know what? He said, Jim, he said, you know those Kennedys down there? You know John Kennedy and his family? I said, yeah, they're those Indians. You know, they're Paiute Shoshone. He said, they're related to Hank. He said, they moved down there at Lord McNett, which is not very far from there. This is only like within a mile and a half of that sighting. He said, they had sheep and goats down there, and they said a Bigfoot walked into the yard, reached over the fence, and grabbed a sheep, and the sheep screaming its head off and just walked off with it. Several times this happened. They left there and won't go down that road for no way in this world. They will go back there. They left. Well, that was enough for me. We went back home. And Jimmy said, Dad, what did you see? I said, I saw a Bigfoot, a Sasquatch, an abominable snowman. That's what I saw. I don't believe they exist, but that's what I saw. Years later, as people, research companies talk to me about Bigfoot and all this stuff, I finally came up with the idea that these were Nephilim, that they are some type of creature that is a cross between an angel and an ape or a man, like Goliath was. They're very hard to kill because they're supernatural beings. They go between dimensions. And that's why they don't get them all the time. They do kill. They say they can. They told me they can outrun a wild horse and catch it and take it down and eat it. They can outrun a deer or an antelope or any animal like that. They can kill it and run and eat it. Up there, they told me what they ate up there. Now, not too long after that, 2 weeks later, two surveyors saw the same thing I saw, and they reported it, and they took off. And then, a few years later, they saw another one up there, but it was shorter. It was about 5'8" or so, and looked like an orangutan almost, and it was messing around up there by Boundary Peak, and I think about 20 people saw it. It's on there. If you look up Bigfoot sightings near Dyer, Nevada, it'll tell you all this on the internet, Bigfoot research. Those things are real. What are they? I think that's exactly what this is. That's why God destroyed the earth in the flood right here, was to get rid of those creatures because they had contaminated mankind, and God's plan to save man was going to go through what? Through man. Through the woman. And if they could contaminate the DNA to where it was not pure, do you understand what we're talking about? And then it said these Nephilim were before the flood and after the flood. Now, I believe from what we've found before, I did a whole class, like two classes on this when I studied Genesis. And we studied all the different scriptures where it talked about these giants in the Bible and what their names were. Their names. There are a lot of names of them. The book of Enoch tells you the names of the angels that cohabited with women and what terrible things they introduced in the human race. Let's go on further. Now, do you have any questions about that? Spooky, huh? Okay. Now, we have Noah on page number 57 was a preacher of righteousness. And I believe why Noah, it says Noah's generation was pure. He was not, his DNA was not contaminated. If you go into the book of Jasher, you'll find out who he was married to. His wife was about 150 years older than him. And they lived a long time, you know. Tells you where she came from. She came from Zeth. All right, Zeth. Jesus gave an answer to the question, what shall be the sign of thy coming and the end of this age? We live over here in the church age, don't we? What will be the coming of the sign of the coming of this end of this age? It said it's going to be like over here what happened before the flood. You think some of these Bigfoot sightings should be talking about some of these things? What if they all came out at once and appeared in the end time? Read the book of Revelation, all those weird-looking beasts that are there in the end times. But in the days of Noah were, so shall be the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days of Noah, before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage. There's a little more to this than that. What were they eating? Flesh. What were they drinking? Blood. What were they doing in the marriage? Yeah, all the lust. Now they were eating in lust, they were marrying in lust, and they were drinking in lust and rebellion against God. Until the day when Noah entered into the ark and knew not until the flood came. And when Noah entered into the ark, what happened? God said, go get an ark, didn't he? Did Noah lead all the animals into the ark? Who got the animals into the ark? God called them into the ark because those weren't contaminated either. They weren't contaminated at all. The animals that went into the ark were not contaminated. Okay? They weren't contaminated. Some people have thought that some of these giant lizards and stuff were mutations from angelic beings. If you look at the Greek gods and everything, they're half man and half animal of some sort. Weird looking things. Until the flood came and took them all away, and so shall be the coming of the Son of Man be. The following outline was taken from one given by J. Lewis Talbot, or Lewis T. Talbot, and should be studied in the light of present-day affairs. Main topics given by Dr. Talbot, many comments are the writers. The study of the days of Noah, breaking down of the barriers. Now, again, we're going to skip over some of this. We're not going to talk about the breaking down of the barriers between lost people and saved people. 2 Corinthians 6, 4 through 18, be not ye unequally yoked together. What's that talking about? Primary interpretation, Brother A. Be ye not ye unequally yoked. Primary interpretation, not secondary. What?
False religion or false teaching?
Don't work with unbelievers. Don't work with unbelievers. We try to say that. Don't marry an unbeliever. Well, you shouldn't marry an unbeliever either. But you shouldn't work with unbelievers, is what it said here. And of course, this is that period of time. What was happening during this time? What happens when a church member went and lived and was with unbelievers? The unbeliever could say, hey, I know where that church is meeting over here, and I can tell you. And guess what would happen to the church? The Apostle Paul, or not the Apostle Paul, at that time Saul, would go and kill him. What fellowship has unrighteousness with unrighteousness, and what communion has light with darkness? What concord has Christ with Belial? And on what part has he that believes with an infidel? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God. Now, primary interpretation of that, Brother Ray. Ye are the temple of the living God. Ye, who's that? The Corinthian church.
Okay.
All right? Ye are the temple of the living God. The church is the temple of the living God. You individually, as saved individuals, yes, God does dwell in your... It's the Spirit of God dwells in you. But right here we're talking about church fellowship and church relationship. God said, I will dwell in them and walk with them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And this is talking about Israel in the Old Testament, in it, and then it's referred to the church in the New Testament. Wherever, come out from among them, be separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith El Shaddai. El Shaddai. God Almighty, the Lord Almighty. 2 Corinthians 6:4 through 18. There has been a breaking down of barriers today. And we know we live in a Laodicean church age, don't we? The churches today look like entertainment centers, and you can't tell church people from the lost world. That's the way it is. Did the Bible say that's what's going to happen? Yeah. What does Laodicean mean? Huh? No. What's Laodicean mean, Brother Ray? Laodicea. Laodicea. What's it mean? People judgment. People are going to do what's right in their own eyes. That's what they're going to do. People are going to do what's right in their own eyes. We're going to start over on page number 59 last week. Do you have any questions about this? Because it's about time for you guys to go nearly, isn't it?
I have questions.
All right.
So, when we were talking about the Lapsarian, the verse that confuses me and the verse that, like, makes me question is, I think it's in Romans when he's talking about the potter doing what he wants with the
yes.
clay, and how can the clay say, you can't do that, you and that God makes one vessel for honor and one for dishonor.
Mm-hmm.
That verse, I mean...
Yeah, that does look contrary.
Yes.
But what does the rest of the Bible say?
I know, but so what does that verse mean?
It means that God created mankind for honor. All mankind. But some of them became dishonorable, reprobate, didn't they?
But it says
Did he allow them to do that?
Well, it says he, but now I don't know. Now
yeah.
I don't know the Hebrew or the Greek. So
yeah.
So I'm taking it from the English translation.
Yeah.
But it says some he created for honor, and some he created for dishonor.
Yeah.
So it sounds like he created.
He created evil.
Right.
Yeah. He created reprobate.
Right.
He did not create the reprobate. Who actually created? Did he create them? Did he create them? Did
yes.
God create the reprobate?
Yes.
Yes. But did he create them to become reprobate? No. They all have the same offer, 1 John 2 and 2. 1 John 2 and 2. How do you reconcile 1 John 2 and 2 with Romans? We know what 1 John 2 and 2 says. Did God create all man? Did he provide salvation for all man? Did he call all man? Who reprobated them? Even though God created them, actually who did reprobate them?
Themselves.
They reprobated themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a good question, though. There's where your superlapsarians will come in with that very argument.
Yeah, and I'm going to need to study more and get pick your brain some more. Because
oh,
that,
yes.
That answer still does not satisfy my itching.
Yes.
I can't remember it, so I'll have to find out.
Yeah.
And then my other question
uh-huh.
is when you talked about forbidden knowledge, because I know that's in the book of Enoch, that the book
yes.
of Enoch talks
mm-hmm.
about writings and things like that. So what were some of those forbidden knowledges that these evil angels brought?
There's a lot of things that we do not know. But what was the tree they weren't supposed to touch?
The knowledge of good and evil.
The knowledge of good and evil. Some of these, this forbidden knowledge was from the evil side. What can you do? Are drugs evil? Can the drugs and alcohol be used for evil? Mm-hmm. Yes. All right. Is man always trying to invent some way that they can do something else? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was all there. They had all of that knowledge right there. The knowledge of dividing of roots. And what was that?
The knowledge of what?
Dividing of roots. When it's talking about, this is herbs and stuff. Herbs and stuff, the tea leaves and things that they use to tell fortunes, mm-hmm. fortune telling, soothsaying, all of this, this is what it's talking about. These are some of the forbidden knowledges that they, can these people actually, can you correspond with demon sources and get knowledge of something that's happening around you or something happened far away from you and you, can you find and know what happened?
Yeah.
Yes. That's forbidden knowledge, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It didn't come from God. It doesn't come from God. All right. Thank you for being here one more time. Good turnout today. And let's be dismissed in prayer. Young lady, would you like to dismiss us in prayer?
Okay.
All right.